anytime I see someone saying this is the most efficient or proper way to lift now, I always think of the opposite and how to do that. We have a 360 degree world of movement, right? Why are we cutting off chunks of it saying it's bad? We tend to keep our world very closed in and efficient because that's where we can generate the most force. And I think the most underrated thing trainers could do is incorporate play. Increasing your capacity and resiliency is possible. Preventing injury is not.
This is Maestro on the Mic,
a podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it popping.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here, coming at you live with another episode of Maestro on the Mic. Today I have with me the one and only DJ Murakami. You guys probably know him as Strong Camps on the interwebs. He's a mover, he's a shaker, he pushes the envelope, he pushes the boundaries, he stirs the shit. It's good. I love what he's doing. I put out a little post and said, who do you guys want to hear? And his name popped up. So here he is. Without further ado, welcome to the show, DJ.
Yeah, thanks, Shante. What up? How's it going?
Living the dream, my man. Living the dream. You guys aren't listening. If you hear some background noise, it's because my guy is always working. He's at a gym right now. Are you at your home space, like your home base?
Yeah, I'm at home base, Human Strong headquarters. And people are being like louder than usual on purpose, I think. They're like bouncing basketballs in here.
Exactly. That's right. I was like, I hear things bouncing. I didn't know if it was bodies or what, but I was like, I'm not going to question it. It's fine.
The mumble rap is turned up. We the ones they're talking about.
What has happened to music? All right. What? So my dude, DJ, can you give the people a little, I don't do intros. Can you give the people whatever kind of intro background? So for those of them that don't follow you, they have a little bit of an idea of who you are.
Yeah. So I guess I'll give you my little story. I started just training in a park, people for like $5 a head, athletes over 10 years ago. And from there, I went into strength and conditioning with some high schools, club teams. I worked at an athletic training facility. And then I started working with a general population at a commercial gym. And I've kind of went through every phase, you know. I was at the bro bodybuilder phase, went through the CrossFit-y phase, went through the HIIT circuit phase, functional training phase, whatever that means. Went into power bodybuilding, Olympic lifting, which I loved. And then went into the movement scene, generalists, I think is what they call themselves, specializing in being a generalist. But yeah, I injured myself in every single one of those. So I was kind of hopping from one to one, trying to figure out what the way was, what the path to physical enlightenment was. And at the times I was bringing my clients through the same thing I was doing, because that's what we mostly do, right?
Yeah.
If I'm doing it, it's what you need to. But now I'm just trying tear through all that and just do what I enjoy and try to help people do what they enjoy.
My dude, I want to tease out something that you said that was awesome. The path to physical enlightenment. Can you explain that a little bit or say something about it?
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people are looking for, at least from what I can pick up there. I mean, you think about it, we went from kids where we just played, and then we went into a sport, and then we kind of exercised for the sport, and then we got out of it and we became an adult, and then we have to get in shape. So we went back to exercise, or a sport, which I consider like CrossFit a sport, you know, I think people,
it is, you're 100%
even
right.
If you're just exercising to look good, I consider that a sport, like bodybuilding, you know? Mm-hmm. So they're looking for a sport to get them health, or movements to get them health, even if it's like hand balancing, this and that. You hear people talk like it's a mystical experience being inverted upside down, you know? And I think you could find that feeling with almost anything. So people are trying to find that feeling.
For sure.
And yeah, there's many paths up the mountain. And I think it's more about the body you have that's walking it than the actual path.
I like that. Make it unique. What has been, I mean, I love that you've gone through your story. You've done a bunch of different things. I always encourage people. I'm like, if you want to figure out movement, if you're trying to learn more, the best journey will be your own. It's not about going to school and sitting in a chair and reading a bunch of books. It's like, go and explore, and you embody that. You said you've gone through all these different paradigms. What would you say you're finding? I don't want to say, I don't know if you've found, but you're finding on your journey towards physical enlightenment.
Yeah, I feel like I'm off the journey now, but
speak on that.
Yeah, so I don't work out to necessarily learn skills or tricks anymore. I just work out so that I'm able to have fun. So I just try to make shit work nice. You know, I know you talked to Hunter and he talks about, you know, capacity and all that. So, you know, I love doing that, but I feel like the other half, which is just as important, is what are you going to do with it? Like, you have to use it for something. It's, if you're just trying to make all your joints have this capacity, it's arbitrary if you're not putting it into a embodied practice, either socially, you know, engaging your mind. Something fulfilling. Yes. So we need meaning on the other half. So I think, you know, as long as you have work on the hardware, work on the vehicle, but then do something meaningful and fulfilling with it, which is what I'm talking about. Like, I think people are searching for that meaning, and you could find it in any type of mode of exercise or movement. But I feel like that's where people are lost. And they want to be sold on
Dude,
it, you know?
I love that. I think that, you know, obviously I spend a lot of time on the internet and social media and stuff, and I completely agree where people are working towards gaining this capacity, gaining this mobility, gaining this movement, whatever, but they're not actually doing anything with it. And it's like, you know, having the shiniest car, but it sits in the garage all the time, and you're like, all right, that's cool, but like, the whole point is to enjoy this thing. And you, the three words that I always see on your Instagram is expand, control, explore. And I love that last part. If you were to put it into like physical therapy speak, that would be mobilize, stabilize, move. Mm-hmm. You have that last part there. You have to go and do something with it. It's like, what else were we given these, as Hunter says, these meat vessels for? It's like, you have to go and use it. So speaking of using it, then your training is very, or your movement practice, what you do now, is very non-conventional or unconventional, whatever the word is. You actually did a really cool post the other day and just showing you doing like a maybe it was a one-arm snatch with a sandbag. And the captions are always actually what get me, and I enjoy them the most. And you said that, you know, you 10 years ago would have done this for the gram and then like walked away with a busted shoulder. Whereas you now is like, do I have the ability to do this? How can I be safe in this position, stable in this position, strong in this position? And then what can I do from this position? So one, thank you for sharing quality stuff like that. But what is your movement practice, if you will? What does that look like now?
It's so just like the expand, control, explore, it's kind of chopped up like that in the thirds. So I start from the joint view and then go to the global view and then go to the, what do I want to do with this system outside of that, which could be, you know, half of it I post a lot is just playing around with shit, you know, trying cool stuff.
It's nice.
Or rock climbing, you know, jujitsu, like doing something engaging where It's mm-hmm. not exercise. And if you want to work, I think even if you want to exercise to have fun, you still need to train to be able to do that, in a sense.
Yes.
So,
for sure.
Yeah, the explore is whatever you want to do, whatever makes you happy.
I see you do a lot of stuff. What do you like doing?
What do I like doing?
All the things. Or actually, you know what is a better list? What don't you like doing? That's a shorter list usually.
Well, I don't like, I mean, it's the context, right? Like, so I hate doing cardio or endurance stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm going on a hike or playing tag or playing handball, I love it. So it, once again, it's why am I doing it? Not so much what am I doing? Yeah, it depends. And I think we need those, like they're built in. Like we, like play is something mammals do. And it gives us a social, there's social learning involved. We get all these neural goodies going on in your brain. But also, I think it regulates the nervous system to a sense. Mm-hmm. Like when you're doing this like roughhousing or playing with another individual, you're reacting, which is different than exercise because like think of like a CrossFit WOD. You're doing these reps in your head. Like you're never having to adapt to anything outside of you. So you don't necessarily have to be present in your environment. So I think like nature is a great way, but another human being might be the best way to, to get that type of movement in where you're reacting, you're performing a task and you have to orient yourself to the environment. And that's how you get in that flow state because you can't have this preconceived pattern or motion of what you're going to do or do the right way. You just have to kind of go with it and get the job done.
And feel and explore.
I totally forgot
man.
The question was.
That's fine. I said, what don't you like? This is an even better answer. And I love that you bring in that concept of, you know, having another human because then the environment changes. That's one of the biggest differences between that and, you know, something like CrossFit where things are a bit more set if you're doing the traditional, like in the gym kind of CrossFit. Like they're trying to introduce other things and obstacle courses and things outside. But for the most part, you know, the environment is pretty static. Whereas you do something, like you said, with roughhousing, you're forced. And actually, I used to climb a lot more, but that was kind of the biggest difference between going indoor climbing and outdoor climbing. Is indoor climbing, the environment's very static, and like the color, the handholds are color coded, so you can like take a step back and really see, and nothing changes. Whereas you go outside, and there is, you know, there are routes designated typically because you see where the chalk is that someone's been on there, but it's a dynamic, more of a dynamic system, and definitely the nervous system loves that. But I think people have to work towards that. It doesn't just, because of how things are, how we learn, the environment that we've been forced into, people don't really necessarily adapt as well. And oftentimes I think maybe don't like having to do some self, what is the word I'm looking for? Not necessarily self-reflection, but saying, how am I feeling? What is going on right now? People really like to be told. We love wearables. Like, I have my watch. It told me that I'm tired. Like, well, how do you feel?
Oh my God.
You see it all the time. You mentioned flow. Are you into that Superman books? And
oh yeah, it's an awesome book.
And so Joe just came on. He was recommending to the listeners Rise of Superman. And what is the other one?
Mexico. What's his name? Who's the guy who coined the term flow?
Literally, I thought that the microphone was cutting out. I was like,
that's just me trying to pronounce a dude's name.
The guy who, I'm gonna look it up. Yeah, I see why you are saying that. Mihaly Longlasting.
Yeah, yeah, he has some good literature, a book on it. But you know, it's funny you're asking about flow because they say that's the peak human experience, right? And I think what I was talking about with people trying to find meaning, they're trying to find that peak experience, like that flow state. Mm-hmm. And so this is a funny story. So I was just in Texas teaching a workshop, and it was at a gym owned by a weightlifting coach. And I think he did some USAW stuff. You work, teach for CrossFit. So big in the Olympic lifting community. And I'm telling him, I'm like, hey, you know, the best feeling I've ever had for movement was catching a perfect snatch. Like, I've been chasing that my whole life.
Yeah.
And we're talking about where it would fit on the spectrum of flow, because it's different than, you know, I think skateboarding or distance running. Like, it's a shot. It's like a punch in the dick of that peak state, you know? It's very intense.
Yeah.
like, you see these people's faces after they catch a perfect snatch. They're surprised.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to nerd out and talk about the formula and the nervous system and all the states of how to get there. So we're like, how can we recreate this to make it more available to the larger population where they don't need all these crazy prerequisites to do it? So how we were defining it, we were saying this is kind of like playing Russian roulette, you know, high anxiety, lots of adrenaline. You approach, you know, and then you kind of let go on that pull under and pray, but you need full commitment
and pray.
So this guy's like, I got a gun at my house. So
Oh God.
I don't know anything about guns. So I go over to his house, but I'm like, if you say it's safe, I'm willing to try. So he hands me this gun and he's like, it's not loaded. I have no idea. I'm sweating. I've only known this guy for a few hours, by the way. And, but I have to know if I could recreate that feeling. So I put the gun to my head and, click. And it was very anticlimactic. It's very depressing. But yeah. So I don't think.
So it didn't work.
It didn't get me in the same state as a snatch. Yeah.
No, it didn't. It didn't work. I mean, I feel like you'd have to put a bullet in the chamber or whatever, like the revolver yourself, and then spin it. And then maybe you'd get closer to it. But I still feel like that would be. You're crazy.
DJ. Or maybe, you know, the people who are addicted to that game, they're waiting for the time the bullet does go off because maybe that's what they're looking for. But you that's don't have the time to enjoy it.
Yeah, you're right. You're actually absolutely right. Sitting there, one, you would have a story like that. Two, just thinking about all the variables that go into those moments. Like, you know, I watched that show, what is it? Black Mirror or whatever. It was pretty big on Netflix for a little bit. We're talking about it. Yeah. They had one episode and the guy was, he like put this thing on his head and he was able to experience pleasure from like other people's fear.
Or their pain.
And
right?
So, or their pain. Or he was able to, like, I think pain caused him pleasure, something like that. And so at the end of the day, we start to see like how pleasure is tied into fear and all these other things that, you know, circumstantial and situational that would, in my opinion, tying back to what we were talking about, contribute to that flow state. Like, I think that, you know, a novice lifter wouldn't say that catching the perfect snatch gets them in that same feeling because they don't know the rest of the struggle and they haven't gone through the years of like not having it or being really close to having it or knowing what it could be, you know, and how situational and circumstantial that kind of flow and that feeling becomes. There's so many things tied into it aside from just like what is the situation, what is the event that's going on.
Yeah, we kind of stated that. So there needs to be a complex skill you must learn first because it has to be an automatic, there's an automatic part where you can't think. Your body just has to know, and that takes years and, you know, learning it. So yeah, I'm going to keep playing around with that. We'll see.
I want to ask you a question about that. Actually, it's something I've been talking about with some other movers and clinicians and stuff like that. This concept of, you know, learning a movement, it becomes automatic. You don't have to think about it. Golf is a perfect example. Ideally, your swing stays the same. You've been doing it forever. And when you start to think about it, that's usually when you fuck things up. But very much in the same line of thought, the concept of resourcefulness, where the more resources you can give your brain and imparting, you're giving these to your brain by moving more, right? That's what we were talking about in wrestling and things like that. It gives your brain more resources, more experiences to deal with. In theory, if you were to give your brain, your nervous system, more resources for something like golf by working on, let's say, swinging the opposite way, in theory, I feel like that should, at the end of the day, once you go back to working on your normal swing, should help it. I don't think anyone tries that because once you're at a really high level, if you go and do something else, you usually fuck it up and you have to get worse before you get better. And so like no one's going to test that on like some super high level athlete. But based on your musings, your experience, your experimentation, self or otherwise, what do you think? Like if you had a high level mover that does something very unidirectionally, they're very good at that. They are just, you know, on autopilot. If you introduced a counter movement, you think that ultimately down the road that would be a beneficial thing?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe that'd be fun to experiment with. But I think for anyone who's doing a high skill movement, I think number one, you have to build the structure and capacity of the system. I mean, look at the Chinese weightlifters. Mm-hmm. They're jacked.
Yes.
They could handle it. You know what I mean? Even if they do it however they want to do it, they can handle it. But I think as far as the actual skill, man, I feel like cues are just one little part of it. I think I think there's a feeling that you have to tap into that we can't really articulate yet. But I think you have to go into a mode where you're not thinking linear mechanically, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You have to embody a feeling or be possessed by a certain spirit. And I feel like the very high level practitioners are good at getting into that zone. If that
makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it makes
That's what I'd like to see. How do you, I don't know, how do you, because it's the task that requires you to get in that zone. I don't know if you can get in that zone if there aren't high stakes or something complex, you know?
Yeah, totally. I like you said, situational. I think that certain things need to be at play, and that forces you to let go, which is so terrifying. That I love that you use the example of snatch. For those of you listening, I don't know if you've ever snatched, but the hardest part, in my opinion, of weightlifting is not getting strong. It's having the trust to drop under that fucking barbell. That's like, here we go. This is, in my humble opinion, very counterintuitive to like any kind of self-preservation. You're like, let me lift this really heavy thing and then drop underneath it. Like, that is the thing I struggle with the most, for sure. So I love that you use that as the example for kind of that moment, that state. And that's also why afterwards, when you do catch it, you're like, holy shit, I was just there. And then you do remember that feeling of like, yeah, that was it. And then you spend forever chasing it yet again.
Yeah. And you when you do the pull, your mouth is open, you know, you're like a lion going in for an attack.
Yeah.
And then you catch it surprised, breathing through your nose and almost smiling.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you're going from a full sympathetic to almost rebounding to parasympathetic. And I feel like that creates something that's why people are chasing that dragon. And that's why these CrossFitters are staying up all night watching cloak off videos. I think that's what they're craving, especially when it's just right and it feels like it did it by itself and you were part of it.
Yeah.
I wish I could bottle that and sell it.
Dude, that would be the number one drug and people would OD in a second. They would love that feeling. And for those of you that don't Olympic lift, you know, it's exists in so many other things, like obviously, and I love that DJ used the snatch. If you've ever done a muscle up, same thing. When you get your first muscle up, especially if you're not like fucking looking like a crazy person and hanging, dangling on the bar, when you get like your first really good muscle up and you just, you nailed it, man. You go from like full sympathetic, you're thinking, you're like on alert, you're like, how am I feeling? How's my tension? And then you end up above the rings or above the bar and you have that, you just smile. And I would agree. It's like you have that big swing into a parasympathetic mode where you're just like, dude, something happened that was awesome. I was part of it. I created it, but I don't really know exactly what happened, but I felt every moment of it. That would be the drug for sure.
Yeah, I've heard it compared to tricking or like doing vaulting and gymnastics. I mean, there's a moment where you leave the ground and then you're, you know, it takes over and then you land and stick it.
That's something that's so far out of my comprehension, but I like that you likened the two, because I know, like, for me, I'll look at certain movements or paradigms and be like, what the fuck? Why would you ever do that? But, you know, when you try to put it in terms you understand, you're like, because it's that moment, it's that feeling. And that they, this just so happens that their nervous system, they get it when they're doing that. Like, clearly I have some control issues, and the thought of launching my body anywhere and just flying through space is not so appealing to me. But I can see, just in the context, you know, the way you phrase it, why someone would want that, where you're able to really feel human potential.
Yeah, and there has to be a level of confidence and competence and confidence.
Yes.
In able to do this, which is why I feel bad when there's people who don't have an outlet to achieve that state. And I would like to offer that to people. Because, I mean, when you look at movers, we're all just chasing that dragon, you know? We're all chasing some sort of flow state high, I feel like.
Yes. Yes.
Even if it's,
you are so right,
egotistical, like, it's, I don't see that as better or worse, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's different.
We're all chasing just different. That feeling.
Wow, just different, and we see it in different paradigms. If you look at the same word, but you know, the yogis and the Pilates people, and you know, aggressive skateboarding, whatever it is that you're doing, we're just chasing that, like that, chasing that dragon. And you make a great point about feeling bad for people that don't have that in some capacity. And I know for a while, especially CrossFit is my, I enjoy CrossFit. If I'm gonna find and go do something, it'll probably be CrossFit related. And I know for a while that, and it still exists, the majority of people that I'm close with now, they do CrossFit. And for me, I don't really care what movement you subscribe to, but I knew that when I first started with CrossFit and I was into it, that if I met someone who did CrossFit, that they had at least one thing in their life that was exactly what you're saying. They had one dragon to chase. And that is so important, I think, to just mental health, human health overall, having that thing. Otherwise you're just, you know, you're going through life sitting at your desk all day and waiting for the next day to come. It's kind of terrible.
Yeah, CrossFit, it has all the variables. Like, it's, you're getting the social dynamic, which is huge. You're part of something in a class. You're pushing yourself. It's the same thing you see. I think a lot of CrossFitters maybe had you see them have addiction issues in the past, and it's kind of fills some sort of void. For me, that's how Olympic weightlifting felt. Like, it replaced a lot of stuff in my life. And I mean, they're all hooking up with each other. They're all on a high, right?
It's true, man.
I love it. You know, it's a good institution to have. It's like, you know, that's probably why people went to church before. I don't know. Like, they're having these higher level experiences. Any mode we could do that, you know, is healthy, that's sustainable, that has a low barrier to entry, which is what I would like to look for as far as my training. I want to, I think we should look into that. And yeah, it's feelings in states of experience more than technicalities and, you know, all this other shit people talk about on Instagram.
I mean, that's why I brought you on, because I feel like there's certain people out there that are seeing, living, experiencing, moving towards, promoting the bigger picture, and you're speaking it right now. So you said something there that was awesome. You said about the practice or the addiction, if you will, being sustainable. I really like that. For you, what, in terms of a movement practice, what does that look like? Something that is sustainable.
So the, you know, the expanding your capacity of your body always. I mean, that's foundational for me. And then I feel like my strength work, or my, you know, controlling load and controlling my body, I try to have as much variability, not in a sense of just changing things up, but you know, like I like to work with a sandbag. I do a lot of sandbag work instead of barbell work because it's self-limiting to an extent. I'm always in different positions. I'm never doing it the same twice. It's a wily, you know, implement where you have to adjust your body to it. And yeah, like I'd rather play tag than do sprints, you know, as long as something has the more variability and complexity. I think complexity is a better word than variability.
I like that.
The better. And that's another thing that has an easier entry point and more people can do. I think it was Carl Paoli who said, what did he say? It was so good. I'm going to get the right word for that. But he was talking about kipping pull-up.
And okay. He said, look,
more people can do a kipping pull-up than a strict pull-up. The task is the same. Get from A to B, here to here.
Yes.
But you're offering more people with, you know, different bodies, different capacities to engage in that. And you could do it however you want. You could get from A to B however you want. But when we start making it not about getting to B, but about how you get from A to B, I think that's when people actually might incur more harm. Because you're telling a body, this is how I want you to do it. They might not be able to. So they're like squishing that square peg in a round hole. So yeah, I like that concept of finding things that where you're never going to have that path to A to B. You know, it's always changing. And the wider I can make that circle of movement, the better.
I love that. Resources, exposure, complexity. I like that you said variability, not just changing things up. And so, and then you amended that, I guess, to really be complexity, not just changing things up. The more you expose yourself to, obviously in a, you know, quote unquote, safe manner, a graded manner is probably the best word, stepwise approach, the more you expose yourself to, the more you become resilient towards or anti-fragile, whatever, you know, words that people want to put on it. And when you start limiting yourself to a singular approach, that's honestly when we start to see problems where it's like, I'm only going to do it this way. And then when gravity takes me out of that way, suddenly I'm fucked. You had a great quote, and I made it a maestroism because it's one of my favorite things I think that you've ever said. One man's bad form is another man's resilience training. Like, that is perfect. I actually, when you were speaking earlier about the, like, the Chinese lifters and such, that's immediately popped into my head because you see them doing like super heavy Jefferson curls and things like that. Whereas you come to the States and you show a Jefferson curl to a physical therapist, and I'm only gonna speak about them because that's my lane. And so many of them were like, you should never do that. And then you're like, but what happens when you bend down to pick up your shoe and you do that? And then your back breaks off. Right. You had a nice little social media, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, stint where you're talking about picking things up off the ground and that rounded position. Like, that was, you want to just actually talk about that a little bit? Because the listeners may not know about that series of posts that you did, just showing people, like, bending over and rounding your back and using more posterior chain, if you want to get technical, is not in and of itself the enemy.
Yeah, sure. And real quick, Carl Paoli said, increase complexity equals increase inclusivity. That was his quote.
Oh, I like it. Say it one more time, DJ.
Increased complexity equals increased inclusivity.
I like that.
Yeah, but as far as right or wrong ways to lift, anytime I see someone saying this is the most efficient or proper way to lift now, I always think of the opposite and how to do that. Because I think we get in trouble if we don't have that balance of, you know, I had an injury before, like years ago, it wasn't from this, but I would always go like knees out super hard on my squats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I don't do that, and I do the opposite. Does that mean you shouldn't go knees out? No, it just means it's a cue. And I think it's a cue you should use for certain people when needed.
Sure. There you go.
But when we get these things like this is the way to do it, it probably came from someone trying to correct or bring into balance a certain joint position during a arbitrary movement, right? That you're having someone do.
Yes. Yes.
So I don't like the idea of putting it out, especially on the internet, with like a green check mark and a red one saying that this is inherently bad. You really have to take that on an individual basis. And I want to be able to do things the efficient way, the inefficient way. I mean, most things we do are inefficient, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is going back to the complexity thing we were talking about and, you know, having a wide world of movement. If you see rock climbers at a high level who, I mean, there's a girl who grew up rock climbing. She never did any like standard gym work, and they had her test a one arm chin up weighted on a pull up bar. She's never done it before. I don't think she's ever been on a pull up bar. She knocked out multiple reps. People train for 10 years to do a body weight one arm chin. But she did it because, you know, if we think of like the Westworld character or that figure during the intro, who's like spread out, right? Or the Vitruvian man. That's probably a better comparison. But yeah, I mean, we have that whole world of movement. And the further out you go, you know, the lever's long, you have less torque generation, less power. We tend to keep our world very closed in and efficient because that's where we can generate the most force, most weight.
I like that.
So I think as long as you, do that too. Get as strong as you can and get as strong as you can out here in your weaker parts. And we have a 360 degree world of movement, right? Why are we cutting off chunks of it saying it's bad? Kids don't do that and they'll fall and eat shit and get back up. But I feel like little by little, as we grow up, maybe you hurt yourself falling off a bar and you're like, you know, that's bad. Or my shoulder's bad. That's even worse to call your shoulder something that's bad. And that world of movement gets chopped off a little sliver here. Maybe your low back, you're like, that is bad for my low back, or my low back can't do that. Yeah. There's a whole section of your life, you know, of movement, experiencing a certain plane that's taken out from your life, and then you really lose the capacity to do it after a while, after years. Like, think about people who haven't squatted, you know, past the toilet seat in years. It's not there anymore. So I feel like that's what we're doing to people when we're saying this is not the right way to do this, you can only do it this way. And I know they have good intentions, but I feel like when you make it such a blanket statement, and a lot of PTs do that. They're not saying in certain cases, they're saying, no, the shear on your spine is not good. You cannot be in flexion and pick something up. Like, dude, even if you look straight, you're probably in some sort of flexion when you're picking up something heavy. And if you pick up a rock, a sandbag, your groceries, anything in the real world between your legs, another body, you're going to be in flexion. So why not train it so that you don't hurt yourself in it, right?
Expose yourself to it.
Man. Yeah, it's like anything else.
Otherwise, you will expose, because life's going to take you there. I love that you use that analogy of physics, a lever arm, and life, and how we keep things close to us because we can generate the most force there. That is fucking brilliant, my man. I'm going to rewind this and go and listen to that. That was really good.
We get caught up in efficiency. The most efficient way is the correct way. And I don't think that's true. And I don't think we are in the most efficient. You're not going to be able to put your knee sleeves on, set your toes to pick up something outside. That is only something that usually occurs in the gym, which is fine. Train it. I do that too.
Yeah.
But, you need the little vitamins outside of that and not just the meat and potatoes.
So good. The most efficient way is simply the most efficient way for that context. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. in terms of just tying this back into what you had said earlier, you know, people not having opportunities to have those states in their life or have something to chase to get to those states, not having opportunities to move, you train people still? And what does that look like? I'm trying to plug you right now, DJ. What does that look like?
Oh, yeah. Well, so what I try to do for people, especially people who come and they're just like, they're not training for something. Because I train some CrossFitters, mm-hmm. marathon runners, you know, people who do certain specialized sports. Like, we're going to train you to be able to do that and do what you love. But some people come and they're just like, what do I do with my body? And I think the most underrated thing trainers could do is incorporate play, which is giving them these external tasks, situational things where they can interact with their environment. And like I said, another human being is one of the most complex things for another nervous system to interact with. So I think giving people that, and you'll see them do things that, you know, if I told you to do 100 sissy squats on one leg, you would be miserable. But if I'm having you touch your foot to where I point on the ground in a low gait, you're smiling while you're doing it. You're getting variety. So you're not, you know, if something bothers you, you're not going to go there. And it's just setting up a situation to move with meaning, with immediate feedback, and you're enjoying it, which isn't me being a good trainer or smart. It's something that we already know and that kids are doing, and that you don't have to have 10 certifications to do. You're really just facilitating another person moving organically.
Simple. I love that you're talking about this. I actually had a webinar I did earlier this morning. Co-host or whatever of a webinar, and the other panelist was my good friend Dr. J Pop, and she's a pediatric physical therapist. And that was what you just said, but way more eloquently, was the whole message of our presentation, where there's no switch that suddenly is like, now you're in adult mode. And yet we act like there is. And the remedy to so much, I think one of the remedies to so much of what ails us is getting back to our play, our original states, and realizing how much medicine there is in that kind of movement. So I love that's what that looks like.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the switch that happens is, as adults, you go on this conceptualized higher level thinking of, what is the movement going to do for me? Is it going to do something for my muscle mass, my cardiovascular system? Mm-hmm. Is there like we were talking about with the cues for like a snatch or whatever, or a high level skill. I think we need more of the feeling or the state of the nervous system or the social, you know, being in that, can you be in a mobilized fight or flight state, but have a parasympathetic control because you have a smile on your face and you're socializing? Yes. Like, where else I don't know anywhere else you could get that, really, as far as a movement practice than play.
I don't think it exists.
But it's so natural. That's all we had before, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I don't think it's all these other man-made things, because you put all these other factors on it. And you're like, put all this, like, you know, stress for the performance and the outcome. I actually just brought Meredith Rood on. She's a CrossFit Games athlete, great athlete. And she said a quote, "Have expectations of effort, not outcome." And to me, a lot of what echoes in that is, be in the moment, be present in the moment, and feel what you're doing as you're going through things. I think that we get so, like exactly what you said, we get so caught up in, what is this movement going to do for me? You know, what's the outcome of this thing? As opposed to, like, what is the experience that I'm having? Can I be present and feel, truly be present and feel? I think we're so good at being divorced from the activity and just, you know, I'm not trying to speak down to anyone, but I feel like, myself included, we're really good at just not being present and really enjoying what and feeling and experiencing what is what is going on. Because I mean, that's also going to be one of the only ways that you're ever going to get to that flow state, is if you're experiencing in the moment. So you are taking in what's going on and you know, pooling these resources so that when that time comes, when you, it just clicks, you have those things to rest on.
Yeah. And if the feeling of the situation is just as important as the mechanics of whatever you're doing, I think people, especially in my circle, I feel like they might not be on board with that as much either. Like, you know, if it feels good, do it. Like, remember that Theragun thing you had?
Yeah.
Like, everyone hates on the Theragun. Like, they start talking about fascia, but I'm like, dude, that feels so good. I want one.
It feels so good.
And I remember I posted that, and somebody was like, well, so does masturbating, you know, but ooh, is that going to make you better? It was one of my friends, cool guy.
You're like,
but it's like, yeah, masturbating feels great. I want to do that, and then I want a Theragun at the same time. Like, why not?
What's the problem here? Why exactly?
If you enjoy yoga, you know, do yoga. Like,
yeah,
I know we could argue about the efficacy and like what's going on mechanically, and what you think is happening with, but we're getting caught up in that same, what am I doing for my system? And we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Like, you really enjoy that. And you have friends who do it, and you look forward to it. And, you know, that's really good stuff that's hard to recreate.
Absolutely. The experience matters irrespective of the methodology. Like, I mean, from a clinical perspective, that's, you know, my world, I guess. That is something that is so grossly overlooked, where we're just going so far down the research holes that it's like, did you stop to ask that person what they liked and how it felt and what they think they needed, as opposed to being like, well, your tissue is doing this, and if I put this in the nervous system and then your mechanoreceptors and the fascial orientation, like, yeah, that stuff, think about it, cool. But we have to take a step back and I think champion that experience and that connection that the person has to, whether it's you or patient, client, whatever, has to that moment. Also, the tool is Hypervolt.
I'll get a Hypervolt. I want to get one of those.
Hypervolt it's honestly super legit. I mean, they both do the same thing again, but if we're talking about experience, it's very loud to use a Theragun. The Hypervolt is it's just a nicer, sleeker experience.
I don't want people to know when I'm using it upstairs.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm like, what's he doing again?
He's doing it again. We're gonna run out of battery. Oh man, but that's another reason I enjoy not being married to a specific mode of training anymore. Yes. Is anyone who comes in, if you use the right principles of how and why you're doing it, then you could really, you want to come in and do bodybuilding, you want to do Olympic lifting, you want to, whatever you think is what you want or what is good for you, you could do it.
We'll
do that, but we're going to do it, you know, with these things in mind. I might not even tell you, but I'll feel good about what I'm doing, increasing your capacity and giving you more freedom of movement. And you use that to do whatever you want. So it's liberating, I think.
So you say all the right things, DJ, all the right things. I have to ask, because we went over the X's and the check marks, they kill my soul. So I'm glad we went over that. The question that I asked Hunter that he's so passionate about, do you believe that you can prevent injury?
Well, I think you can like mitigate it. I don't think anyone can prevent it. So no, because I mean, there's the chaos of life, right? And all we're trying to do is in the gym, create some on the ordered side, prepare ourselves. I get on this part because there's a lot of people who are like, oh, you know, natural movement, functional movement. Man, we live in a time where we're so jacked up sitting at school for 12. I went to school for more than 12 years. For like two decades, you know, that's the life. Yeah, hey, edit that out, Shanti and Bo. But that's, we don't live a natural life, so we have to kind of do these things.
Yes.
And I wonder, I bet even the Paleolithic primal people were getting injured. It's natural.
Shit happens.
Yeah, shit happens.
Like, that's well like you can't, you can't. I think I love that you said that same word, mitigate. Like, yeah. One of the things that I do see, and obviously I refer back to CrossFit because that's just what I see a lot of. I can't say whether these people are on stuff or not, but there's definitely something to be said. Yes, this is true, actually. It has been confirmed. You know, there's something to be said about how fast they come back from injury.
Oh,
now, clearly, you know, I can't say about performance-enhancing drugs, things like that, but there's definitely something to be said about if you go into something and you're really strong, you may get injured, but the after effects of that are not as great as if you went in and were really weak and really immobile and, you know, had no capacity of any joints in your body. Like, that cannot be denied. How these people got to those places, okay, that different conversation, but definitely the more you prepare yourself for it, I think the easier it becomes, the aftermath, the less the aftermath tends to be. I think you can't deny that.
I agree 100%. Like last January, I believe, I separated my shoulder, like grade three, like...
Jiu-jitsu?
Jiu-jitsu, yes. Yeah. I actually have the video of it happening on my Instagram. But it didn't really change much for me. I mean, I was still doing everything I did, maybe to a lesser extent. And it's fine a few months later, but it didn't really stop me from training. And I had that same injury years before, and that took me out for like half a year.
Yeah.
So I can attest personally to make your and same thing happened with my ankle when I was surfing. I landed on it funky. It was like bruised. But I do my ankle training in those, the tissue was trained in that angle where it was injured, and I kind of walked it off a week later and it was fine. These are things that would have took me out before. So I guess just increasing your capacity and resiliency is possible. Preventing injury is not.
Love it. I love it. And for those of you listening, rewind and listen to that again, because I know that for me personally, I'm scared of injury and I'm working on overcoming that by doing more things. I know that exactly what DJ just said, what we've been talking about is as you expose yourself to more of these things, you build capacity, you build resiliency in these new positions, postures, poses, whatever, movements. When gravity or life takes you outside of them, outside of the capacity, and you do get injured, the aftermath doesn't have to be catastrophic. I tore my ACL when I was 15, and for me, that was catastrophic. It changed my trajectory with sports. It changed everything. And I look back on it and like, yeah, because I went in super weak and moving like shit. Like, I was a tremendous athlete, but never developed true movement capacity. I was really good at these things, and you stop playing, you go into sports, what is it called? Specialized sports, and you're just kind of doing the same things over and over again. And then when you get injured, like you said, it wrecks you, it takes you out. And I'm still in that mindset because the body remembers, the nervous system remembers. And I'm just like, dude, if I get injured now, I'm going to be out for so long. Instead of realizing, like, that is why I need to, graded exposure-wise, obviously, expose myself to these things. Because when life happens, this way, the aftermath, the flip side of it, isn't devastating, catastrophic, and just, you're gone from everything. We are internalizing that message of how robust and resilient we are is something I, too, am working on. So you guys out there, hopefully you heard what he said and you're listening to that.
But
DJ, go ahead.
I was going to say also, like, be thankful that your body and your nervous system is protecting you in a sense, yes, because it doesn't want you to be hurt again. So it's not like there's something wrong with you or you were scared to do it. Like, your body's trying to protect you. It's trying to keep you alive this long. So say thank you, and then maybe you're okay to do something at a low dose and work from there.
Yes. I love that he's talking about gratitude there. From the psychology aspect of things, if you read up on Brené Brown's work, She talks about she believes that one of the most terrifying emotions that we have as humans is joy. And she says that that's because close second, we start worrying about it getting taken away. And so for those people that do champion movement, for me, movement is an identity. I've always done it. It's just, it's a part of me. And so when you are so happy about this thing and you're like, oh, I love it, the next thing you get this kind of foreboding joy and you're like imagining injuries. And so you're just like, well, I'm not going to do all that because then if I do that, then I might get injured. But she describes that one of the best ways to head it off at the pass, or one of the best ways to counteract this foreboding joy, is actually with gratitude. Exactly what you said. And say, I am grateful that I have the, whatever it is, whatever circumstances are, but in this case, you'd be like, I am grateful that I have this movement ability. And that is actually the best way psychologically to deal with some of that. Exactly like you said.
Oh, that's interesting.
I love it. It all ties together. Right? It all ties together. For you guys listening, I you guys know I always put everything in the show notes. I'll link all the stuff that DJ's been talking about, and I will link just some Brené Brown clips in there. It's really, really cool stuff. She's a smart lady. Smart lady. I've been working with my life coach on some stuff like that, because coaches need coaches. But Mr. DJ, it's like almost hitting an hour, and so I like to not be like, you know, monopolizing the people's time. I'm not going to even tease out anything else with you, because I would actually love to bring you on a different time and we can talk about, if you want, OSU and FRC stuff. And are you part of Stick Mobility, or you just do stuff?
They don't okay. Pay me any money. They should though, right?
Okay. Right? Exactly. I literally thought, is this guy?
No, I honestly just, okay. They're really cool people. I love those guys and I love what they teach. So I always offer to help out.
Did I send you the video? I sent it, I'm pretty sure, for the fashion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For Gil's thing? Okay. I mean, for Tom Meyer's thing. Mm-hmm. Awesome. You guys listening, we had a really good, interesting discussion about fascia and fascial orientation and fascial chains. And there was a post online, basically, that was like, I don't think fascial chains exist. Someone prove it to me. And my response was, whether or not you believe they exist, fascial orientation is a very real thing. So yeah, you can cut it out and make it a chain, but, or you cannot cut it out and understand that it's just part of the whole. But
yeah, I think fascial orientation, if these people saying that and you guys and like the other side got together in a room, it would take 1 minute to be like, oh yeah, we're I agree.
Yeah. Same thing. Exactly. I'm like, just everyone would just talk instead of like, you know, throwing things out there in a inflammatory ways. I'm very like very cautious when I don't usually post on people's, I did comment on Hannah. I'm friends with Hannah, so I did comment on that post. But usually if I ever have something to think of, like discuss, I'll be like, I'm going to DM you, just because there's so much lost in translation. And then people jump on and then the people post. And the discussions, like, I realize can be helpful that happen in the comment section. But I don't have enough time to be dealing with trolls and such. So I was like, I'll take it to the DMs. But I totally agree. If we just sit down and talk, you realize we're all fucking doing the same thing, trying to do the same thing.
Ideally. And you know what else? Even if you don't agree with the person, if you like them, you're not going to have a problem with what they say.
Yes. Yes. It's so easy to formulate these things without speaking to somebody. Like, you see on social media and you're like, oh man, what's that person putting out? Because you've dehumanized them. You're like just talking to a screen. So you're like, yeah, that person's bad and that their ideas are dumb. But if you actually message them and then you talk to them, pick up a phone, meet up with them, suddenly you're like, oh, there's a human attached to these thoughts, or thoughts attached to these, to this human. And then you're like, oh, actually, but they're a cool kid, like, it's fine.
Like, that's how I feel about your boy, Dr. Perry Nicholson. I don't agree with half the stuff he says, but I still love the guy, and I love the other half of what he says, and I encourage everyone to go learn from him. Like, he really cares about helping people. You can't meet the guy and not like him. So that makes me, whenever he says something, I'm really open to it. And I look at it and I think about it. And I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, I couldn't do that for someone else I didn't know if I saw it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to do, I guess, look at the world like that.
You're so right. take a step forward and invite some vulnerability there and make a connection. Like, people don't do that. So thank you for doing that. That's part of the reason I wanted to bring you on here. Not because I was like, oh, I hate this guy, but just because I want people to listen to the discussions and hear people have to say outside of just the 1 minute clip on Instagram or the, caption. But you do a lot of Instagram lives. You want to give the people your social media contact?
Oh yeah, that is at StrongCamps on Instagram.
The one and only.
And I will find everything on there.
Is that the easiest way to get in touch with you? The gram?
The gram. Do it for the gram, You know?
Oh, I mean, always. Always do it for the gram. Last thing, because I think it's really cool. I mean, you should pitch it a little bit. The Chimera Project.
The Chimera Project is it's three beasts, mythical creatures combined. Oh. Hunter, the mobility god. John Yoon, the most beautiful, graceful mover on the planet. I'm going to go out and say that. And me, a meathead, combining to put together like a training program. It's all three of us trying to bring, because, you know, it's hard. Like I said before, when you get training from someone, you're going to learn from what they're good at, what their thing is. So we have three people with three different interests and specialties, bringing a program where it all kind of flows and fits in. And we're going to have private group where, you know, we answer questions and put out tutorials and all these things. So yeah, if you guys are interested in that, just you could DM me or Hunter or John, and we'll give you the info.
Amazing. Again, you guys, that will be linked in the show notes. Are you still accepting people for OMU, or is that closed?
It's closed right now, but you can get on the waiting list. Every new semester, we let us select a few in. So yeah, I would encourage anyone who's interested to get on the waiting list. Online Movement University is a platform where we host different teachers from different disciplines or movement practices on, so that you can get a taste and kind of a introduction exposure to what they do. So we've had, you know, we're going to have strongman, we're going to have Wim Hof breathing, we have fighting monkey on, hand balancing. We just want to bring all these cool microcosms of movement, worlds of movement and cultures, and expose them to people, because maybe you might like it. And then, hey, you could, you know, explore that some more. So yeah, that's amazing. Giving people hopefully some meaning also behind it.
Meaning, options, self-selected learning. He's doing amazing things, guys. So you got options there. Chimera Project, OMU. Hit him up at Strong Camps. Follow him on Instagram at Strong Camps, and you'll see all the information there. That's how I found out about all these things. Read the stories. He posts really good stuff, really thought-provoking things. Hold the screen down. Read the whole thing that he's underlined. People are too – we have no attention span that these
days. It takes way too long.
Hold it down. Read what he actually underlined. It's worthwhile. It gives you the cliff notes there. And just open your mind, right? Take a second and expand your mind a little bit. Expand, control, and then explore. Mr. DJ, is there anything else you'd like to leave the people?
Yeah, I want to say thank you so much, Shanti. This was so much fun. Yeah. Your podcast is awesome.
This was really, really good. It's definitely one of my favorite ones that I've recorded, because in the intro, I talk about the bigger picture, and that's exactly what you deliver today, is the bigger picture. Like, people can get really caught up in the weeds and the nuances of movement and the knee angle and what's this tissue doing. And then here you come talking about the path to physical enlightenment, which is definitely going to be the title of the episode. So,
and valgus knees is the cliff where you fall off and die.
That's, and then we put a red X over that.
But yeah, you're really good at this. This is awesome. I felt like we achieved a cooperative flow state during our talk.
Yeah, it just goes. I could talk to you endlessly. We have to like meet up. Where are you?
I'm in Southern California.
But where exactly? In Southern California?
Temecula Wine Country, beautiful Temecula.
Oh, you're
where they play country music.
Yeah. There's a huge line dancing place. I love country, obviously. There's a huge line dancing place out there. One of the biggest, I think the biggest I've ever been to.
Oh, yeah?
Out there. Lucky man. You should go sometime. Expand, my man. Yeah. Expand.
Explore. Yeah. Let me get my, I don't want to say Theragun because that's not the right one.
No, Hypervolt.
Hypervolt.
Get your Hypervolt. Jeez Louise. Thank you again, my dude. You guys listening, thank you. I will have all of the stuff that you want in the show notes. This episode was fantastic. So thank you, DJ, for coming on. And thank you guys listening for tuning in. I know you could have been doing anything and you chose to listen to us. And that is absolutely fantastic. I can't thank you enough. If you liked it, I'd love if you give it a review. If you loved it, I'd love it even more if you subscribe. It does help people find this, but if you don't feel like doing either one, that's also fine. Just, I hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, my friends, Maestro and DJ out.